Welcome to the Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Are you a small business owner who thinks they pay too much in taxes? We can help. Give us a call or book a meeting by clicking the link in the show notes to book a free financial consultation so you can have peace of mind about your financial future. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as a key to unlock your workforce. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, here with my co-host, Al McDonald. And Al, as I look out the window, my prediction for you is you're not getting out on your bike today.
No, I think that's probably a pretty safe prediction, Robin. As I've said before, I am a fair weather biker, and today is not fair weather. So, but hey, the alternative is this. I've got a day of podcasts ahead of me.
You got Podcast Friday. Well, joining us on the pod today is Chris Bryce, who is the founder and CEO at Dot Fusion. And Chris, we had such a great conversation the first time we met, dove into a lot of things, and I'm going to kind of parlay that into this episode and bring things up that we talked about. But can we start at the beginning and just tell us a little bit more about your company, Dot Fusion?
For sure, for sure. You had just got me thinking, Al. I spent most of my life kind of a semi-pro bike racing around, and we'd get up on some mornings like this and just have to grin and bear it and put on a happy face and get out there and plow through the mud. But yeah, I'm also enjoying the opportunity to join you on the podcast on this somewhat soggy Friday. Yeah, I have been nurturing and overseeing a digital agency for the last, well, going on 25 years now. We started in 1998, and our ethos has always been this kind of juxtaposed venture of designing and creating really beautiful digital products that are usually a little bit on the complicated side and involve some systems integration stuff with larger size platforms. But we're happy when the products look cool, whether that's a website or a mobile app, and they work really well and ultimately satisfy the business that we serve and their customers.
And Chris, can you tell us a little bit about your journey, about from younger days, where you started in business, how you ended up here?
At the very start of things, where I guess that would be benchmark, where I got excited about business and where I kind of found my zone of being of value to an organization, also feeling really supercharged, was actually in the restaurant industry. And I had kind of stumbled upon that, kind of being somewhat directionless as a teenager. And I found a spot where I could be in a creative environment. You know, there's the theater of the front of the house, but was really in admiration of restaurateurs who really knew how to run the systems underneath everything. And that got me pretty stoked. And it was on that restaurant journey that I wound up with an opportunity to get a little bit distracted there and learn a bit about marketing. So I had some friends that had a need for just a little bit of a hand on the side. So I put all my effort into anything I commit to. And that was right at the days where kind of digital stuff was starting to pop up. It wasn't quite web, but we're producing marketing materials on CD-ROMs. It was kind of like, this is kind of like a restaurant in a way where we've got an order from a customer for something that requires thought and energy and creativity. But in order to pull off a big digital product, there needs to be systems and operations underneath. And I just got super stoked with that industry. Started Dot Fusion actually shortly afterwards, making CD-ROMs for companies. And I had a partner who was a designer, and I actually could do some coding way, way, way back then, mostly cut and pasting from here and there. But that was the genesis of the business and kind of finding alignment with what kind of really made me tick and where I could add value out there in the marketplace.
And when we first met, I remember getting the introduction, and the person that introduced us had said, hey, talk to Chris. He's got a really cool company, really cool story. And by the way, he's a certified B Corp. And I have to admit, I had to go on Google and say, what is a B Corp? Because I had no idea at the time. And of course, it's interesting. You're looking for a red card and all of a sudden you see all these red cards. Well, now I'm seeing other B Corps and I didn't know what it was before, but now it's on my radar. I'm starting to see those. But I think our listeners, for the people that maybe aren't aware of what that is, can you just talk about that a little bit further?
Yeah. And it was maybe 15, 20 years ago, a friend gave me this book called Let My People Go Surfing by Yvonne Chouinard. He was the founder of Patagonia.
Oh, cool.
And back in the day, I was doing a lot of rock climbing and kind of adventuring outdoors. And the beauty of what this book gave to me is that there was an opportunity to run a business that also had a greater impact to its employees and to the folks that were serving from a business perspective and the environment on the whole. And I think that was the cue way back when to stay curious about what a business can do outside of selling some stuff and getting some money, essentially. So then I kind of got slept in the back of my mind. And about 7 years ago, we were just at the start of building out a hand-nurtured offshore team in Cambodia, in Phnom Penh. And I had the opportunity to go travel around and explore a bit. And I met a chap named Ben, who was the executive director of a nonprofit organization that was taking care of the kind of Galapagos around that area of Cambodia and the shorelines. And he was transitioning out of that role and taking on a new business, which was helping organizations on the B Corp journey. And what B Corp essentially is, it's a third-party organization that vets all of your policies and holds you accountable for your statements of being equitable, sustainable, and environmentally aware. So through those discussions with Ben, it was the right time at the right place. And I was looking for something to kind of substantiate our claims of being like generally decent humans in the business context. So we went through that process, and I think that may be the most valuable thing so far about the B Corp experience is having all of our policies reviewed, taking a look at how we treat people, how we hire people, our day-to-day business practices that could be as simple as, you know, do we use sustainable coffee cups? What do we do with our garbage? And it was really designed for slightly larger organizations. Like, we were a shop of about 20 people, but you could see that there was some meaning behind the certification, where I could also have triggers for talking about these things. I'm not really a protesty kind of person, but I thought, hey, here's a little mark that gets people curious and we can talk about kind of ESG in the business place in general.
That's interesting. Again, I've never really heard of that either. So thanks for sharing that. But I guess why? Why was that important to you, and why was it important for you to bring that to your business?
Two main things. One was satisfying my curiosity of what to do with a business. Also, at that time, we had explored converting the entire business into an employee-owned organization and a co-op. I was just trying to figure out, like, what are we actually doing that means something? Also, trying to take on a little bit more of the adventure of business. And we were also talking a lot about, you know, sustainable tech and green tech and all these kind of things. So to have gone through a bit of effort, there's both an investment involved, both financially and from a time perspective as well. So I thought it was cool. It also introduced me to another network from a business community perspective of like-minded organizations that are by default great folks to do business with. We build large, complicated things that take a long time. And, you know, just that alignment on shared values has been really great for us when we work with other B Corps. I think today my opinion has changed just a little bit in that the discussions that we've been having around this certification process is shifting towards, why isn't there perhaps a poorer mark for businesses that are not behaving just simply as they should be? Do we really need to go through this investment simply to say that we're like baseline decent and behaving properly? So I think that's maybe the next movement, where there should be just a standard of how everyone does business. So it shouldn't be us going out of the way to say that we're doing good and using our profits like wisely, but we're not behaving poorly. So that may have been a little bit of a shift in my mind, where I think it's the concept that's important, not so much the actual mark. But I think for the next 5 years or so, it's important to support that movement because it does get everyone thinking and chatting about sustainability.
So can I dig a little bit deeper with this whole theme here?
Yeah, of course.
So a couple of things come to mind. It strikes me as you're a little bit forward thinking in this area. I'm going to bet, and again, you correct me if I'm wrong. Number one, you might get some pushback because I'm willing to bet there's maybe comments about there that maybe, you know, you're wasting opportunities, you're wasting resources. Why do this? It's not profitable. So that would be maybe one comment about any pushback that you've seen and how you might respond to that. But then I'll flip it around and say, what have been the benefits? What have been maybe some new opportunities that have come that you wouldn't have gotten had you not gone down this path?
Yeah, super cool question. I think the pushback may be more around defending the B Corp idea as more multinational organizations wind up with a certification. The easy target, I guess, and could be unfair, is Nespresso. So that's a Nestle company. They're not really known for going out of their way to be like extremely awesome stewards of the world, but you have to caveat with that they might be doing their best and they're constrained by, you know, whatever is going on in their business. But Nespresso just became a B Corp. On the positive side, it certainly gets the name out there. On the downside, there's a kind of an overlay of greenwashing, and that goes on in the travel industry in particular. Where do you draw the line around saying that you're, you know, carbon neutral by this day, but there's really nothing been going on? I love this topic for discussion, not to really call out and put anyone down, because I think it's a mark of doing your best. Where it's really benefited .fusion is in and around hiring. Our workforce often skews to slightly younger folks that are kind of taking their either design or development careers to the next level. And these days, they're looking to work with organizations that have these kind of values, that understand the work-life balance and their own unique needs as an employee as well. So I think that's probably been the best effect from things, is like, yeah, folks want to work with organizations that are at least putting something behind their words in that department.
Walking their talk a little bit, so to speak.
Yeah, and by all means, we're not perfect and no one is, but I think it's just micro movements in the right direction are important.
Yeah. Well, that's great. No, and again, like Robin said, never really understood that before, so that's good to hear. And it's interesting what you say about maybe that younger generation maybe putting a little bit more value on that type of thing that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, I'm not sure if you're a Seinfeld fan, but I remember watching an episode where George Costanza, every time he made a decision in life, it never really worked out that well. So he started doing the opposite, from ordering the sandwich that he'd order at lunch to making decisions in business. And all of a sudden, everything went right for him. And when I'm listening to you, because we've talked with a lot of business owners, CEOs, and what's not surprising is profit is important to them, status, ego, freedom, all these things. And when I'm listening to you, I'm getting the sense of sometimes you're doing things that may seem counterintuitive to some people. And I would imagine that skews into personal life as well. Can you talk about where that comes from and how that's affected both business and your personal life?
Absolutely. And coincidentally, I just was reflecting back on this book that the subtitle is The Education of a Reluctant Business Person, Man. And I think that really modeled what I'm up to. Like, okay, we need to be profitable. We need to keep getting new customers. But there's a certain narrative of reluctancy, which I think I've just personified, and it kind of fits well with me. But I don't know, there's a bit of a vibe there about how we go about doing things. And we've made a lot of decisions that weren't all that great as well. But yeah, hopefully this leads to validation that this all means something to the greater good.
What would you say is, because I love asking this question, I don't ask it enough, but I have asked it over coffee with a lot of people, not necessarily on the podcast, and maybe we'll start doing it a little bit more, but what is the best and worst part about running a company yourself?
The best part is your ability to try your ideas and your own unique ways of doing things. Like, for example, I just had this idea after being a tourist in Cambodia and getting a few signals there. Hey, this may be a neat area to invest and develop our own team. There's certainly a bit of a cost differential there if we could do this on our own. If I wasn't running the company, I couldn't just take off for 6 months and kind of embed myself and learn a language and get really involved and see the outcomes of testing out ideas. The worst part definitely is the degree of accountability. For me personally, it's kind of my word is on the line from the beginning of the engagement with the client, where I'm naturally promoting the business and winning them to close a deal, but it's me that's accountable all the way through to the end. And if we're late, if things aren't delivered on time, you know, I have a great team that's loyal, awesome, and does whatever they can. But at the end of the day, it's also on me.
Yeah.
So there's the downsides, you know, it's like going sailing. You get some fair weather and everything's beautiful, and then you can just get like super smashed down. But you develop mechanisms around that. But I would say that's the trickiest thing. It's really keeping the idea of what a great experience is all the way through the engagement and afterwards. Also much like a restaurant. Although if someone doesn't like their food, you can just make them another steak and, you know, they're not terribly out.
If I were to ask Al that question, I know his answer would be two things. It would be dealing with me and Joe would be the challenging part.
Is that the positive or the negative?
Well, no, the positive is when Robin and Joe are both out of the office. But, you know, it resonates with me, and I know it will resonate with a lot of people that we chat with and our audience. And that's one thing that I've realized. As much as someone else can screw up, it's ultimately me that has to make that phone call to the end user and apologize and try to retain the business. And that's just, you know, I was joking around with Stephanie, one of our employees, and I said, oh, good, I get to make another phone call because something had gone wrong. Not our fault at all. It was on the carrier side in this case. But again, they're not looking at the carrier. They're looking at ARIA benefits. You're the people who brought that carrier to us. This is on you. And you know what? You have to put your ego aside and say, we screwed up, and take ownership of it. And I think people appreciate that. So I appreciate your honesty in that answer. Mm-hmm. And I think I will start asking that a little bit more. It's very interesting.
Chris, we've talked a little bit about you. We've talked a little bit about your business and what you're doing. Do you want to talk a little bit maybe about the industry and just what you see as some of the trends in digital modernization, where it's going? And I don't know if you want to comment or can comment, like the impact of AI, is that going to have an impact on your industry? Where do you see that? Maybe just talk about, again, what's happening in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. So just a little bit of context around this, because the term digital can mean a lot of things and different things for us. So digital modernization is typically around the digital product itself, which is a website, a piece of custom software, a mobile app. We're usually delivering a thing as opposed to kind of digital marketing, which overlays with what we do, but we're usually on the design of the thing, something that shows up on a screen or a kiosk or a watch or a device. So there's a bunch of stuff moving around right now. One major topic would be the platforms that digital products are built on. People are probably familiar with WordPress, for example, or Salesforce.com from a CRM perspective. So these are simply platforms that enable folks to present a website or a thing. There's a big shift to this concept of decoupling your content from how it's presented. There's a kind of an industry term called headless architecture right now, which gives organizations and their larger marketing departments a lot of flexibility and freedom to represent content without mucking about in the platform. A little while ago, let's say you're building a WordPress site, for example, every time you need to create a new thing or update something, you're kind of coupled right in there with PHP on the back end, need some back end guys, some front end guys to make it look cool. Well, the new way of doing things now is you commit to kind of a content hub, and APIs are just making calls out to how it's presented. So you just need front end developers now. So you can do things really quickly, you can make things look really great, and you can change how it looks all the time, but you don't have to keep changing the back end and your tech infrastructure. That's kind of one big discussion in the industry. AI, for sure. We've been using AI for a little bit longer than it's been popular, I guess, from a mass perspective. We started out using AI to check our code. So we'd write a bunch of kind of JavaScript stuff or whatever it is. We'd run it through an AI processor and it'll kind of find all the bugs and clean everything up. Now it's writing the code from a kind of a basic to medium advanced level. If we need a React component, we're going to kind of prompt it, build me a component that's kind of like this. Roop, there's the code. And then we go and check it. Yeah, it's kind of cool. We kind of add our slight style to it. It's impacting the journey of someone starting their career in development, where we're challenged and talking right now about what is the roadmap to becoming a senior developer if there's not a lot of junior developer work out there to kind of earn your stripes, because AI is taking that role. So it's something to think about. It'll inevitably just result in kind of a new pathway, but that is a thing for sure. And we're also finding that with AI related to code and web and mobile stuff, organizations now have an increased ability to bring that work in-house. So instead of coming to an agency for us for kind of maybe our smaller kind of projects, there's tooling out there and great AI website builders where you just type in some info. I want a site for my pet store and we have 10 products and ship in Canada and we use Moneris payment systems. It can just go configure everything and you tell it to make some colors and you get 80% of the thing completed. So that's another movement where organizations that might have been challenged a bit from a budget perspective to bring in a bunch of developers and designers, they can fast track a lot of the starting point of all of it and just kind of bring someone to clean it up. 3-5 years down the road, just on the side, we build with larger tools, Adobe stuff and Salesforce stuff and kind of enterprisey things. Once AI figures out how to make a connection between, you know, Adobe's Experience Manager, commerce tools or Hybris or whatever big applications you're using, that model really only needs to be created once. And then you're just saying, AI, connect my content with my commerce. You know, we've got to pass this security. Rough all that out. Give us the proof of concept plumbing. All right, now we just need guys to go in and tune it for the final product. So a bit of a long-winded answer, but that is definitely impacting our scene for sure.
Amazing. Probably something that no one would have ever thought about 10 years ago. Or
Yeah, no kidding, eh?
How quickly things change and how many things are impacted.
I've got one just great, interesting thing that we've been talking about that not many folks have been lately. And that's around how AI is going to really change how people search for stuff. We've already seen it around here where most of my kind of dev colleagues and more technically minded folks, they're not using Google anymore. They're using AI kind of search engines where they can plain text type for something. And the use case for this is, let's say you're looking to buy, I don't know, a blue t-shirt or something like that. Google results in like 40 different stores that sell t-shirts, and you have to go click around and do a whole bunch of things, where soon you'll just kind of type in blue t-shirt, this price point, make it look cool, and maybe not that popular because they want something other people don't have. And it'll just give you the one. So we're looking at AI right now to make complex search much more streamlined. We just released for a little while anyway, the coolest pizza ordering app for a national pizza franchise up here. And with all of the effort and insights and strategy and expertise, it still takes about 10 minutes for a family to make a pizza order. So it could be 3 pizzas, toppings are different on each side. There's a lot of kind of things that you can figure in that order. Why not just tell AI, I've got 4 kids, we want to spend $50, give us the best specials, and we love pepperoni, and one's got to be vegetarian. And it'll just kind of do all of that. So that's what we're really excited about, is using AI to make more complex things faster.
Well, thanks a lot, Chris. Now I want pizza.
Well, I've got an app for you.
Well, Chris, earlier in the conversation, you referenced sailing. Are you a sailor? Do you sail?
Yeah, I mean, what I've learned about sailing is that you should really respect that term of who is a sailor or not, because it's a long journey. And out of respect for real sailors, I'm someone who definitely loves the art and the engineering of being on the water with a vessel and getting to know it and that whole experience, the adventures you can go on, the performance kind of scene you can get into, but probably mostly just the community. And it's kind of a never-ending, dark, amazing hole of information that you can acquire over a lifetime. But I love being on the water, yeah.
What is it about sailing? Because I have a colleague in the industry, and he plans every vacation. He was just in St. Lucia doing a sail. And everything he plans, and sometimes he's sailing alone, especially when it's in Ontario. But what is it about sailing? Because he calls it his Zen time, and there's just something about it. And he said many times he's just drawn to it. But I'd love to hear from your perspective.
Yeah, someone said it really well a couple of weeks ago. It's a super hobby that has a slight overlay of the limerent part of a relationship where you just can't get enough and it just is so satisfying and it's a beautiful journey and you get a lot back from what you put in. But I do think you touched on a really great point and feedback I've got from friends and colleagues that have gone out sailing with me is that it decouples you from land and the stuff that goes on in your mind on land. Maybe some people enjoy yoga or going for a bike ride in the forest. You've got enough to do to keep your mind in the moment, but then you're afforded kind of quiet time. It's 90% boring, actually. You're just kind of sitting there. Often there isn't much wind and you kind of bob around. And that's where I think that experience kicks in, where you're alone or you're with some friends and it's quiet. And especially if you like solo sailing or just a few people, you can really detach. And that's where I found a lot of joy in that aspect.
And you're right. I think that's really important to find something, whether it's sailing or yoga. And I'm remembering when we tried yoga and yeah, my body just doesn't move that way, unfortunately. But I think it is important to find that time away from something. I mean, I use my time when I travel to detach. And it's funny, that's where I'm detaching from business. And yet my biggest epiphanies about the business have come when I've removed myself from that situation. So I can certainly relate there. We have arrived in the section in the podcast, which has become my favorite section, which is Al's signature question. It's a little more philosophical than business. So if you're ready for it, I'd love to let Al throw it at you and see where we go.
Okay.
I always think as we go through the podcast, knowing that we're going to ask the question, how the person might answer, you know, trying to think ahead a little bit. But again, I think you've already given maybe some clues about how you might answer this. But anyway, we'll see where this goes. So a society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any of those proverbial trees that you might be planting?
Yeah. And maybe if I was to give some context of where I'm going to be coming from, I'm kind of in the shadows of my parents' trees. And I was just reflecting recently, oddly, how much I'm like half of each of them. It's very strange. I was trying to kind of really create my own thing most of my life, but I'm magnetized back to like kind of being where they've kind of sent me out there. So if I look at it in that aspect, I don't have kids. So who around me, who may be a bit younger, is kind of silently watching what I'm doing? And I think that's family members. I have nieces, actually, one who's kind of running around in the office right now, and siblings as well, and employees, friends. So I think what I'm trying to do would be to lead my communities with this idea of putting more into the bin than you take out. That was actually an idea from a great friend of mine named Tony. And she just said, if all else fails and you're feeling a little bit unanchored in life, just always put a little bit more in and then you're at peace with what you've done. And I think that's been in the back of my mind through business, through my group of pals I ride bikes with, or in any instance, there's just a little bit of the responsibility perhaps of leading with this idea that you want to add a bit more to your scenes than you're taking out. And that's the first thing that came to my mind. The second thing would be to lead in that, like, candid, I don't know what's the right word, being honest, like just kind of, if there's a problem, it's okay to have your unique way of dealing with it. Society puts a lot of pressure on folks to be a certain way, and kind of whatever or however you want to manage your own kind of self-certification, so to speak, like, it's cool. And I think where society is changing a bit right now in a great way, where people are more open to being acceptant of folks highlighting their own style, you know, however that is.
You said a whole lot of things there that I really like. I like the idea of putting more into the bin than you're taking out. That's something I haven't heard before.
We're going to use that one now, Al, yeah. For sure. That's a good one.
Cool. Yeah. It's like a good default.
I like that concept. So the other thing I clued into was you talked a little bit about your parents.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it amazing looking back how little they knew when you were 16? And how much they knew now that you're where you are now?
Yeah. It kind of changed from like the almighty to like, oh God, you guys don't know anything about anything, to like, oh, just a second year. Like,
yeah. You find out as you get older, they were actually pretty smart, because they weren't smart when you were 16.
No, my word.
Yeah. And then the last thing I'll say, you said earlier about sailing and you're maybe comparing yourself to someone who's like the expert sailor or whatever. I would maybe say, I would love to get out on my bike with you. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you said you were an ex-racer, that scares me. So no,
it's as long as everyone's having fun first, and then, yeah, you can find your suffer friends.
Exactly. There you go. Thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Chris, I want to say thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your journey. What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they have questions about yourself or what you're doing at DotFusion?
Yeah, for sure. DotFusion.com is kind of our website where we try to keep things fairly updated in around what we do. LinkedIn, you can reach me at hello@dotfusion.com if you're more of an email person. Part of my kind of commitments to communities is to always make myself available for a quick chat, a coffee every Friday at 1, which is an hour and a half away. We meet for some Jamaican food up the road at the Real Jerk. Just swing by. All kinds of interesting people are hanging out. So there's some spots where I'll be and always have time.
All right, that's cool. So that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. And remember, success leaves clues, my friends.